Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Fred Haberlin. Fred is an artist who has devoted his life to making art more accessible to people. His sweeping landscapes adorn towns across Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona, and they remind us all why we live here. Over the years, as he's painted his way across the region, Fred has earned a reputation for his open-hearted generosity and his loving spirit. His Native American friends call him Lightning Heart. So, Fred Haberlin, I'd like to start by thanking you for sitting down with me, but more importantly, thank you for your dedication to art and making art so much a part of a community. And I really appreciate that, as do a lot of other people all over the state of Colorado. I wanted to start by having you tell me your origin story. Where did Fred start? Where did he come from?
Well, I grew up at Conejos Ranch on the Conejos River down in southern Colorado. The east side of the South San Juan Wilderness. Last place where grizzlies were left, last place lynx were left. And the guest ranch where I grew up, we were the last ones up into the mountains in the winter. And it was still 15 miles into town. And so that was a wonderful way to grow up with the animals and the horses. The ranch itself was at 8,500 feet, and it was right next to the river. The mountains went up to 10 on both sides, and then our headwaters were all 12 and 13ers.
How'd you get there? Tell me.
Well, my dad discovered it back when he was hunting, when we lived in Texas, when we were little kids. He had been hunting up in Colorado and stopped on the Conejos on his way home. And so we went up there the next summer and camped and liked it so much we went the next summer and camped for a couple of weeks. And then he discovered that this guest ranch was for sale. And so we moved up there when we were little kids, and it was a lucky way to grow up.
What did your father do for a living? What was his?
Well, originally he was a petroleum engineer and was in the oil business in Texas, which was booming at the time in the Midland and Odessa area. But he was a real quiet guy and outdoor-oriented guy, and he wanted to get out away from all the bustle and stuff. He loved horses. He was great with animals. And so that gave him that chance to do that.
Yeah, he found himself in a job that he really wasn't suited for, huh? And looked for something else, the outdoors.
Yeah, I learned so much about animals, about geology, about interconnected ecology, all of that from my dad.
What about your mom?
Well, my mom was a really high intelligence person. She was a very, very smart person. She really was brave, I think, to have moved to another culture, another place, you know, where they didn't know anybody, but also where everybody was either Hispanic or Native American. And the schools were taught by Benedictine nuns. And the other Anglos that were around were all Mormons, all Mormon ranchers and stuff. And so that was our new community all of a sudden.
So do you think your mom had a pause there? Like, what are you doing? We had a fine life somewhere in Texas, and now we're going to go.
No, I think she was a little fed up with the kind of high-rolling life that they had and really was glad for us all to get out to nature.
That was quite a change, though. I mean, a lot of people think they can do that, you know. Well, let's just go to the country and it'll be fine.
We camped up there for a couple of weeks at a campground right above the ranch. Got to know the area and looked around and you know, especially then, it was the least developed part of Colorado and astounding fishing and beautiful places in nature to explore. So it was a wonderful thing to do, brave thing to do.
Being out in the outdoors was something you were comfortable with from early on. I
mean, oh, golly, yeah. Even as a little kid, you know, I wanted to be out of the house as much as I could outside. And, of course, we had the horses and we had everything that needed doing. We're just servicing our guest cabins and the lodge and taking care of stuff. And then we had a really quiet down season there in the winter in the old days. Still, it was, you know, it was an amazing, amazing thing to do.
How old were you when you moved there?
Well, I was a little kid, about not even 10 when we moved there, and the fireplaces were my job, was splitting and cutting wood and keeping all the wood boxes full and hauling trash from the cabins and all of that sort of stuff. That was just a regular part of what we did. But it was later I came to appreciate how much I learned if you were the only one who was there to do it. And then if you didn't do it right, you had to go back and fix it, you know, and it was 25 miles to the closest hardware store, you know. Yeah. And so you had to do it right. You had to make do with what you had, and you had to take care of things, you know, to have a chance to grow up in a place where you did really sometimes scary and adventurous things, which, you know, modern parents probably wouldn't let their kids do, you know, where you had to get out on the bridge with a big hook and get brush and logs off the front piers of the bridge at high water in the spring and stuff like that, you know.
And
you know, truly dangerous stuff.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Fred Haberlin. Fred is famous for his murals that hang on the walls and buildings of towns across the state of Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother who's 3 years younger, and then I had a foster brother who was my age, who was half Navajo, and he's no longer with us, but there was us three.
When did he join the family, your
He joined the family
brother?
When we were 13. His mom went into the hospital in Albuquerque and never came back out. They lived in a tiny little cabin 5 miles down at Fox Creek. And Jackie and I rebuilt the roof on that cabin when we were 12 and 13 years old. But then when she went into the hospital, he moved in with us. And so he finished school with us.
How was that to have somebody sort of move in your teenage years? Were you
That was great. That was great because he and I hiked together continuously and explored together continuously. And we did game counts for the Fish and Wildlife Service. We did all kinds of cool stuff. And
what was that like to be introduced to this multicultural place after having lived in a place that wasn't so much?
Well, I think I was young enough that you sort of have to adapt, you know, when you're the only blonde kid there. So you just sort of adapt to what the new situation is. It was very warm, but fierce.
Explain that. Were you welcomed in one way you were, and in other ways you really had to prove yourself?
Is that... Yeah, both. You know, because you'd get slammed into the lockers with no warning by these guys with mustaches, things like that. You know? And so you had to learn to adapt.
How did you do that?
Well, my initial nickname of Lightning wasn't a compliment. It was the best defense is a good offense. So if anybody gives you, you know, a whisper of trouble, you deck them, you know. But it was all pecking order sort of stuff for us. Nobody was out to hurt anybody else because you had to do that. You had to take care of yourself. But it turned out to be, you know, an enormous benefit. It also took me a lot of my life to unwire that volatility, though. That really happened, I think, in 1971, when I came into the Yaqui tribe, and we were being trained by the old guys.
Well, back up a minute. Tell me how that happened first.
Well, that happened because I went to school at CSU on scholarship, studied up there, studied sculpture, got a degree in sculpture and anthropology up there. But then I went to graduate school at the University of Arizona to study printmaking, doing etching and engraving.
So where was that cultivated? Where did that sense of art?
I knew I was going to be an artist from the time I was a little kid.
Really?
Yeah. I started drawing when I was really young. Huh. But I thought I'd be a wildlife artist or a cowboy artist. Uh-huh. You know? And I thought I'd grow up to do like covers for Field and Stream or something like that and do wildlife art or outdoor, you know, animal art. I was always encouraged by my grandparents, especially my grandfather, who was really into Western art. His dad was an Old West sheriff and marshal. And he was really into Western history and Western art. And then when I was 10 years old, there was a lady named Hallie Smithers who did that painting right there, who gave me my first set of oil paints and taught me to paint at 10.
Hallie Smithers.
Hallie Smithers, yeah.
One of your spiritual guides.
Yep. One of the other artifacts of these recent health events and being in the present is my emotions are just right on the surface. Boy,
right.
They're just bam, right there. And so I don't even try to do anything about it.
Well, and you shouldn't, should you?
I guess not.
Life is a river.
But yeah.
Float.
Surprises me, though.
Because
it's
up.
So boom, just right there, you know. But yeah, she taught me to draw and paint, and I just took it from there.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Fred Haberlin. Fred is famous for his outdoor murals that grace the towns across the state of Colorado. Fred was recently diagnosed with esophageal cancer and has been in treatment for the last 8 months. So I interrupted your entry into the Yaki. You were talking about.
That was part of my whole art evolution, was going to CSU, getting a degree in sculpture, getting interested in printmaking, etching and engraving, going to the University of Arizona. And my first day down at the University of Arizona, and I walked in there, and here's this great-looking Native American guy standing over at the other side of the room working on a clay sculpture with waist-length hair and Sundance scars on his chest and moccasins. And I went, whoa, who's this guy?
Is this a vision? Am I seeing?
Yeah, and yeah. So it turned out to be Will Cosillo, my Yaki brother. So I got to meet Willie that first day at the University of Arizona.
So your relationship with the Yakis, and that's how many years ago?
Well, this year will be my 47th year at the spring ceremonies in the Sonoran Desert.
Describe what that is.
And, the spring ceremonies is about the return of life after winter. It's the first full moon after the equinox. And so it's the return of the light, the blooming of the desert, the return of the cottonwood leaves, all of that.
How has that experience over 40 years? How has that affected your life and your art?
Well, the music gets built into you, where the drumming and the chanting comes right out of the ground and right out of your own center. And if you're there for hours and hours, it really, you know, soaks into you. It's that community production, though, of something that celebrates the solar calendar, the solunar calendar, and recognizes, you know, the sweep of the seasons and all the blessing of life returning after winter. And the fact that people do that every year, every year, every year. And the Yakis discovered, too, that the dance calendar and the dance vows are what hold the tribe together. Because a lot of people that are Yakis who live in Tucson live in the city and work for the TV station, or they work for the city, or they work, you know, in various capacities around town. They have water filter companies. They do all sorts of stuff.
Right.
But they do this big production in recognition of the connection to nature and to spirit every year. What it means in people's lives to have a vow that you keep, promises that you keep, and you do it every year, no matter what.
You've done it every year, no matter what.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah, so no matter where I live.
What it means to you.
Well, it's a pilgrimage for me ever since I've come back to Colorado in 84, where I'd either be going from the ranch or from up here. But I go every year, you know, and there's people that I see every year, you know, and there's three extended families that I'm part of and all of that. And so I get to see all those people once a year. And then I get to see my own son and grandkids as part of that. And I get to see my artist friends out at Oracle every year, as part of that pilgrimage. And so it's been a great yearly blessing for me.
How has that experience impacted your art?
Oh, golly. The art part of it, like just the trip from here down to Tucson and back, is this big diagonal across the Southwest. You know, so it's some of the most spectacular scenery that you'll see anywhere. You know, and it rededicates me to celebrating the beauty of the landscape, for sure. It's that lesson, too, of no matter how you feel, you go do it.
Yeah.
There's been years that I thought, oh, man, I don't have any money. I can't go do this. I've got all these things to do. And right up to the last minute, I'm kind of going, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. And then I'm always so glad that I went.
Well, it awakens you in a way, and it it opens you to these people that you haven't seen sometimes for a whole year.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a great blessing in my life to have that, where I'm part of these different communities, like the Yaqui community in Tucson, and then over time doing murals in different places and so on, where I'm part of the artist community at Salida, where I've done a bunch of murals.
Yeah.
I do the opening to the Telluride Mushroom Festival every year, so I'm hooked into the Telluride community. And so there's these communities around the West that I feel part of, like Leadville, like Salida, like, you know, the San Luis Valley, my home community down there in Conejos County and the whole San Luis Valley, you know, is, and so there's people I've known all my life, you know, and I get to see them on a regular basis. But there's towns all across the West where I can just, you know, pull up and walk up and they feed me supper.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My guest today is Fred Haverlin, who's sweeping outdoor murals adorn the walls and buildings of towns across Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona. You have how many murals over the years?
I'm up to 140 pieces of public art at this point.
How did that start? Tell me the genesis of that.
Well, that started when I was working for Andrew Rush, and we wanted to open up a good cafe that would have some vegetarian options and stuff like that, which there weren't back then. And so some friends of ours found this great building to open Mother Cody's Cafe, another roadside attraction. And so it became the local cafe. But it served not only the artists, but it served the copper miners, and it served the cowboys, and it served the bikers. It was a wonderful cafe, and I did the nighttime desert scene down the east side of the cafe right when it first opened, to really decorate the cafe and make it noticeable.
How big was the mural?
It was 16 feet high and 50 feet long. And then
yeah, that's a mural, all right.
And then later that year, I did one on the other end of the building with this big white buffalo jumping out toward the street and this big buffalo stampede.
So what was the reaction to those? You must have, you know.
Oh, there was a big reaction. Everybody really liked them.
How did you approach them? I mean, did you walk in and say, hey, well, your building needs...
That has happened, where I've like looked at a wall and said, whoa, man, I could, you know, and then I just go find who owns the building and say, here's what I like to do on your wall, you know. But so many times when I'm out there painting on a mural, somebody will come up and say, hey, I've got a building, you know, down in South Tucson where I have a Mexican food restaurant. Would you come look at it and see what you could do? And so then I say, sure, you know, and then I get to go look. Things like that happen, you know, where one leads to another, leads to another. The best thing about most of the murals is they celebrate what's ever best about that local spot or that community, you know, where it's some place that everybody knows, everybody recognizes, everybody is proud of. It also fosters that kind of local identity, where my big painting of the Flat Tops Wilderness, where you go to the post office downtown in Glenwood, every bike tour that comes through town, since that's sidewalk level, there's hundreds and hundreds of pictures of people with their bikes standing in front of that mural, because it looks like you're standing on a rock ledge looking off on Blair Mountain and, you know, and the South Fork of the White. So they become opportunities like that, too, where they're focal points for the community or good backdrops for photos and, you know, makes people proud of where they live.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My guest today is Fred Haverlin. Fred is a spiritual guide and outdoor muralist who has spent much of his life painting his way across the state of Colorado. His sweeping landscapes adorn the walls and buildings of towns across New Mexico, Arizona, and Colorado. Here he talks about a mural he did of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Antonito, Colorado. Earth Mother figures largely in your life and in your paintings. Can you talk about that one and its genesis and what
well,
it means to you?
In Antonito, the first painting of the Holy Mom I did was for Johnny Johnson, one of my high school classmates. That was in his cabin up the Conejos Canyon. And that was the painting that completely painted itself in 2.5 days. I just got to watch it. So people heard about that, and everybody knew the story about Johnny.
Tell the story about Johnny.
Well, he got hit right in the radio pack with a rocket in Vietnam. Killed the 5 guys next to him, shredded his right arm and leg, and he was laying there dying. So he prayed to the Virgin Guadalupe, and she appeared to him and soothed him for 4.5 hours until the medics found him. Nobody could explain why he hadn't bled out or died. So when he got back to the Conejos and he bought this cabin, he prepared a 4x8 panel for me up there in his cabin. And he came and found me, and he said, "Fred, here's what I want you to paint." And so I went up there, and that's how that started. So then the next spring, I came up with a wall downtown in Antonito. And so we painted the story of the miracle at Tepeyac with the Dark Virgin, La Virgen Morena, appearing to Juan Diego the Indian. I painted that story, and that was there for 30 years on the main street of the town. Then the building changed hands after 30 some years, and it got painted over. And so the guys in Antonito called me up and said, Fred, we've got to put this back. We'll find you a wall and we'll get some money for you. And I said, okay, cool. Just kept working. And I was working up in Leadville, repairing my famous Ladies of Leadville. But at that point was when I was losing so much weight and I couldn't get any food down. And I started freaking out that I couldn't get food in while I was running up and down my big ladders. And that's when the cancer in my esophagus showed up. And so I started doing chemo in August for that. And after the second chemo, the guys in Antonito called me up and said, "Hey, Fred, we found you a perfect wall." And went, "Oh, no, oh, golly." And so I drove down there, and it was a perfect wall, all right. But I was in such bad shape that I could barely paint. I mostly sat on the running board of the truck and just looked at it. But I got the black and white drawing done on the wall on that trip. Then 3 weeks later, after my next chemo, I went back, and I was in better shape. And then 3 weeks after that, I went back again, and I was in way better shape. And Teresa went with me and helped me paint the roses on the big wall.
Teresa's your wife.
Yes, yeah. And so she helped me painting the big roses, and we got the color laid in. And then 3 weeks after that, I went back again. And just like before, on the preceding two, on the last day, she took over. And so she gave us this wonderful, smiling picture.
So you became a vessel. You were the right. The painting was passing through you.
Yeah, right. When I started painting the stars on her robe, tears were streaming down my face.
Yeah.
And the painting finished itself. And after a number of hours, I got down off the ladder and I said, "You know what? I think I'm well. I've got to heal up within this, but I think I'm well now." And sure enough, that turned out to be true at the time, where went back up here and went in and, had my next tests and stuff, my next CAT scan. I got weller and weller after that and, gained weight back, and cancer disappeared out of my esophagus, and I got well.
What's that like when a painting, you become the painting and the painting becomes you, when you're in the middle of that?
Well, it's really nice, because painting big anyway, you're not thinking in words so much, and you just give yourself a coaching job, with the left side of the brain that says, draw big, draw bold. And so when, especially in these cases, when she would take over and just finish the painting.
She being the mother.
The Lady of Guadalupe,
yeah. The spiritual mother, yeah.
It's like thought disappears, and you're just painting as fast as you can, and you see these shapes appear. And the more I would stay out of the way, the more I'd just breathe, the better every stroke got, the better the point of every mark got. And then they tell you when they're done, and no matter what, the big paintings tell you when they're done. You just keep working on them till they're done.
This is your 47th year going back to for the Yaqui ceremony.
Uh-huh.
It will be pretty symbolic for you this year. You've had a rough winter.
Yeah, but, you know, it's the return of life in the spring and the triumph of life after the darkness of winter. And
exactly, when you told that story about moving the darkness back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been your battle this winter, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. It certainly has. Over the solstice and over New Year's was a low ebb time for me. I didn't realize how close I was there. You know, now that I've got some energy back and I've got the ability to eat back, that really has helped me enormously.
The deer dancer is a present.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Fred Haverlon, Lightning Heart, thanks so much for all that you've done and all that you do, and thanks for sitting with me.
Thank you, Walter Gallagher, and thanks for all you do.
That was Fred Haverlon. This July, when Fred returns from the Yaqui Spring Ceremony, he'll bring sacred sewa and the blessings of the Yaquis like he's done every year. And he'll begin preparing Soper's Park in Carbondale for the annual mountain fair, which he's opened every year for nearly 30 years. If you'd like to hear more of Fred's interview, check out part 2 on KDNK's website, where Fred talks about mountain fair and public art as community engagement. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on Immigrant Stories, please go to our website, immigrantstories.net, or to kdnk.org. Thanks for listening.